How can we engage the culture, especially in books, music, and movies, with charitable and critical discussion through a lens of faith and as a means of drawing ourselves and others closer to Jesus? I'm Ali LaVille.
And I'm Andy Norton. This is Though They Die, talking about the things of this world through the lens of eternity. Welcome to the show.
Right.
Yeah.
It's a Monday.
It's a Monday. It's a Monday. It is our second podcast. I've been so excited. Uh-huh. Yeah. It's so good.
It's great. So good. I'm really excited
to dive back into this and chat with you, Lee.
I'm stoked to be here, Andy. So on the show, you may have noticed last time we kind of had like a, so I had just watched the movie and Andy was like, oh, I remember the movie. I had some engagements. This time we're flipping. Andy has just watched our movie for today. And I know I've watched it. I know about it and all that stuff, but Andy has it fresh on his mind, and today we are discussing Big Fish. I'm so excited that we're doing this for the second round, because I think the first one is obviously like a, you know, an A-list blockbuster, the works, and Big Fish is pretty niche.
It's not the most niche.
But it's definitely a niche movie.
It's a totally different response when you mention A Quiet Place or Big Fish.
Absolutely. Yeah.
I've mentioned Big Fish to people and they're like, oh yeah, I know about that movie. I'm not sure I've seen it. Or maybe I saw it like was weird.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
That's so funny. So asking you, how many times about do you think you have seen it?
I've seen the movie once. My main knowledge from the show.
Yes.
From the story. Yeah. Is from, it's a musical.
That's
and
right.
I was in the musical in high school and then proceeded to use the songs for a while when I was doing more theater.
Interesting. So you're bringing this perspective where you have seen the movie, but you've been in the musical.
Right.
I've seen the movie. I also actually skimmed the book recently.
There we go. Okay. Yeah, so we've got all of the forms.
Yeah. Absolutely. And so who did you play in?
I was Will Bloom.
Will Bloom.
William
Bloom.
Okay,
nice.
Yeah.
Nice.
The soon-to-be father as a 16-year-old.
Oh, good point. Don't forget to bring that up later. That he's a soon-to-be father.
Which is like Will Bloom. He will bloom.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
I don't know if that was intentional, but we can get into that.
Well, let's see. Okay, so this is Big Fish. So you probably have heard of it, honestly. I mean, if you're listening to this podcast, I'm guessing, especially if you clicked on it, maybe you actually are like, well, what are they going to say about Big Fish? It's a weird movie. Yeah. It is, want me to just jump right into the synopsis of what this is?
Yeah, totally.
Okay, so synopsis. When Edward Bloom becomes ill, his son William, or Will, travels to be with him. William has a strained relationship with Edward because his father has always told exaggerated stories about his life, and William thinks he's never really told the truth. Even on his deathbed, Edward recounts fantastical anecdotes. When William, who is a journalist, starts to investigate his father's tales, he begins to understand the man and his penchant for storytelling. And that is the story. I'm just still like mind blown that you have played Will Bloom. Like, I feel like it's so funny. Okay, yeah, cool. Yeah. And this is directed by Tim Burton. So that's a very memorable, like, you should know that.
Yeah, he does stuff that is wacky.
Wacky and weird.
He's a wacky guy.
Like, he does not do weird stuff. Basically.
Right, exactly. He's got, I mean, which I appreciate about him. I don't love all of his movies, but I love that he has a style and that that's what he does, you know, and you can expect a certain thing when you go to see a movie by Tim Burton.
Yeah.
And you get that thing, whatever that is. It's like, you know, Wes Anderson, we expect all of this really
picture
perfect, straight on shots.
That way of doing dialogue. Yeah, exactly.
What the cuss?
Yeah, exactly. Tim Burton, it's just like, I mean, he does, I feel like his movies look very different a lot of times, but they all are weird. Like, there's, like, you, if I had a dollar for every time I was like, whoa, in the watching this movie, there's so many just weird little moments in this movie. So, again, I want to kind of like start by just talking about why are we talking about this movie, especially when it's like, it's just a weird movie, right? It's like, oh, yeah, Big Fish, like that. Just kind of fantastical, because over the course of the movie, as it says, Edward is recounting fantastical anecdotes, and you see those anecdotes. They're not just told, right? There's like flashback type of style. And so you're seeing all these interesting stories where he like meets a giant and where he tries to catch this huge fish, and where he is going to, you know, amazing lengths to try and win the heart of his wife.
Totally.
All these, you know, very, very many more strange and fantastical stories that clearly can't be, like, strictly speaking, true.
Right.
But that's kind of mostly what you remember, right? Is from the movie is probably all the wacky stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, so why are we talking about the movie then? Like, what's the significance? What's your thoughts?
Yeah, I think a few things. My big, as a young man kind of looking at this story, this was probably one of the first time, if not the first time, that I realized the stories I'm most passionate about are father-son stories.
Yeah.
And I think sometimes in this movie, I think by some audiences, and I'm just ballparking here, but I think that gets really lost, and I think they lose the significance of the father-son relationship here, even though the movie is very clearly centered around a father-son relationship.
Yeah.
And they kind of read more into, like, the whole, you know, our memories and the stories we tell,
right,
sort of thing, which is a big part. But I would argue anyway that the relationship is the biggest thing to draw from this movie. So for me, aside from the, you know, the stories we tell to each other and, you know, what memories live on after we die, it's that father-son relationship and the reconciling of two generations and mistakes and angst and all this stuff. So for me, that's why I love talking about this movie, because I think the movie is messy, and I think rightfully so, then it's a good thing to talk about because we're messy, right? And our relationships are messy. So that's the reason I really appreciate it. I think just, and before we go any further, this probably should just be an understood thing, but there's spoiler. We're going to talk about the whole movie. We'll try and, I think we can totally timestamp in the show notes where the spoilers come up, and we'll probably save it. It usually comes up towards the end, but just sufficient warning. If you're listening to the show, we're going to talk about the entire plot. So if you haven't watched it and you get offended that we talk about something, you...
Yeah, I feel like we tend to, you know, talk about it somewhat, like, you know, go through the movie a bit. So as the podcast goes on, more spoilers happen. And
totally.
Although this movie's also not too bad on, like, spoilers.
I mean, you kind of know.
Yeah, you know what's coming.
Yeah, you're not really surprised.
Someone dies? Like,
When in the synopsis, it says he's on his deathbed.
Yeah, exactly. Shocked. No, that's a good heads up, though. Yes, absolutely. Well, I think that's a great thought on why we're talking about it, because I think that's the thing, is when you think about the movie, most people are going to be thinking about all the funny, interesting, strange stories, right?
With the effects, the stuff,
and because it's Ewan McGregor, if I'm pronouncing that correctly.
Ewan McGregor?
Yeah.
Just say it fast enough and then no one will know.
Absolutely. So who's, of course, most famous probably for Obi-Wan Kenobi.
I love that.
In the prequels. Mm-hmm. But he plays young Edward Bloom, and he does a fantastic job. Like, he's so good.
He is really good.
He's so, funny and silly and likable, and his accent is so syrupy. And
he does the Southern guy,
yeah,
I think, really well.
Absolutely.
I was impressed. I was, yeah.
Totally. You weren't even acting when you did the
Southern guy.
No, he's, so he's, that's what you think about, though, is all the scenes with totally. Him. I feel like there's so much more bright and more interesting than the deathbed scenes, right, between the father
totally.
And the son.
Yeah.
And actually, when I first watched the movie, I enjoyed all that stuff. I thought that was, like, what the movie was about, was all the stories. And I actually didn't like the stuff back in, like, the present day, because there's sort of, like, almost, like, multiple timelines going on, right? There's, like...
It is hard to follow if you're not really... If you're not paying attention.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's, like, the present where William is visiting his father, and his father's dying, and they're still, like... He's trying to get to know his father.
Right.
But his father is still telling these stories. And then you're seeing all these stories and seeing how he's told the stories to Will over the course of his life. But I thought it was about the stories, and I even actually thought that Billy Crudup, who plays Will Bloom, your role, did a really bad job. Like, I thought that originally, at least. I was like, he just seems so awkward, and why is he delivering his lines like that?
Yeah.
And I didn't like it. And then I actually kind of disliked the movie's message in a lot of ways, which we can talk about more later, but kind of the closing message about stories and, like, the meaning of life vis-a-vis stories. I have a lot of reservations about.
Right. Yeah.
But I think having watched it multiple times, I've come to appreciate so much, like you said, the father-son relationship and a son trying to get to know his father and forgiving his father and understanding his father and connecting with his father. Mm. There's some very, very deep and moving things really related to that. So I think that we'll have a lot to talk about here, because I think on the positive side, there's talking about how well made the movie is, talking about some of the really deep themes there between the father and the son and trying that relationship. And then I think honestly, we don't want to, you know, rag on the movie, but I think we want to disagree maybe, or have some, I for one would have some caveats with the, the message that seems to portray at the end.
Yeah. The overall kind of belief system that gets established basically.
Exactly.
Passing
exactly.
On. Yeah,
exactly.
Totally.
Cool.
Agreed. Well, let's jump in. I mean, let's jump into themes, man.
Yeah, just jump right in.
I think so.
Okay.
So it looks like, so there's a lot of, I don't know, truth is pretty mingled throughout. And like, what is the truth? Because so to give some inference, people that have seen the movie, you know that the father, this larger than life Edward Blum character, tells stories. That's like his big thing.
Yep.
But it goes beyond the standard, you know, grandfather or patriarchal figure in your life that tells, you know, just, you know, tall tales kind of thing. Like he actually never buckles on these. Like, you know, I know my grandpa, Papa, God bless him, he would tell a lot of stories, but it was always like, you know, we're duck hunting one time and they got bored because there was no ducks. And so they just started cutting down a tree with the shotguns, shot the tree until it fell over. Like, this is dumb stuff like that, right?
Yeah, yeah.
But these stories take a different approach where he is like, Edward Blum is like, yeah, I met a mermaid.
Yeah, just exactly. Like,
but he never buckles on it, right? Yeah. He never says, oh yeah, no, that was a metaphor for this time in life, you know.
Yeah. You almost wonder if he's, I think actually later on in the movie, the son expresses that he actually has wondered whether his father is maybe covering up some things, right?
Right. Like, which makes sense.
Maybe he has this whole other life, and that's why he won't let me in, and is using these stories as sort of a cover.
Totally.
But yeah.
Yeah. So, Andy, I'd love to hear, you just watched the movie. What is probably a big highlight from the truth narrative that plays into that, or what do you think is like a good point to touch on in regards to what role truth plays in the overall themes?
Yeah, I know. Having just watched it, I appreciated more than ever the way that they keep on threading that theme of like, what is truth versus story.
Mm-hmm.
They talk about how, you know, a man sees things differently at different times in his life. That's a quote from Jenny, who is played by what's her name, Helena Bonham Carter. She everything related to her. So she plays a dual role in this movie,
right?
And she plays both Jenny, who's like a little girl who grows up to be a woman, and as well as paradoxically, she is also to Edward Blum is also this witch, old witch figure who he sees actually in his childhood. So he's kind of got like an out of order, like understanding or relationship to her. And so even just like on who she is, she plays a dual role to Edward, and it doesn't really make sense. It's not linear. But she also says things like there's little scenes like when Will goes and visits her because he's trying to get more truth and get to know he wants to know what was she in his father's life. He's like maybe thinking like, was there an affair? Like, I don't understand who she was to him. And when he first like knocks on the door, Jenny is giving a piano lesson to a boy. And then she says, hey, can we, you know, finish up early? And gives him back like the money that he would have paid for the piano lesson. And I think he says something like, you know, do I have to give it back to my mom? And she says, I won't tell her if you won't. It's just like a little thing, but like the idea of almost like who hasn't done that when they're a kid, where it's almost like well, who would know the difference? You know, like, I think that there's things like that where, like, when we tell stories, if I tell a story about something that happened, like, you don't know necessarily, like, did it happen or not? Like,
right. you have a lot of for it.
Exactly. Yeah. So just little things like that, like, that she would say, yeah, I won't tell her if you won't. Mm-hmm. Like, there's like the thread is kind of keeps on coming in I think that's a huge theme. Mm-hmm. And I think the movie softballs a little bit on like whether that's okay. That
yeah.
makes sense.
Yeah.
Like, cause one of the biggest points in the movie is, the closing monologue. I think mm-hmm. Will says, a man tells his stories so many times that he becomes his stories.
Mm.
They live on after him. And in that way, he becomes immortal. And I really want to pick that apart later more, but
totally.
But that's a huge theme for sure. Is this idea of like, you tell stories. It's okay that they're fantastical because you're trying to like, you're making an impact. You're trying, mm-hmm. you're trying to communicate yourself mm-hmm. through them. That's what I would say.
Yeah. I think a fun trigger warning, we will not be getting into should you or should you not Santa Claus. I'll just leave it at that. We are just going to not even touch that.
Oh my gosh.
I just thought of that. I was like, I wonder if anyone thinks that's where we're going with this.
No,
we're not.
That's really funny. That was not on my mind. That's so funny though. Yeah, that's so true.
But I think, yeah, absolutely. I loved what you were saying just about like the little fib kind of that Jenny has. And I think it's contrasted really well with Sandra Bloom, who's the mother of Will, the wife of Edward.
Yeah.
Because there's really no duplicity in her. She's kind of the, you know, if we can say that, like for the purposes of the story anyway, she's the perfect girl. I mean, she's the one who immediately.
They kind of both are, right?
When
like the two.
Right, spouses. Right, exactly. And I think that's the whole, they kind of hold them up. But I mean, but Edward, yeah, because Edward even is tempted and we might be able to talk about that. But
yeah.
I don't know. I'd kind of like to stick to the, we'll see if it comes up. But she, you know, the moment, you know, something changes in her heart, she's there, right? Like there's not really a lot of deliberation or hesitancy. You know, the moment she knows that like where the truth is, she's on it. She's there for it, which is really interesting because Will is totally not that way, right? Like there's just so much confusion and chaos, it seems like, within him as he's trying to pick apart all these different things.
Yes.
And I just think it's really beautiful that in the father you have, you know, the stories that he seems to be hiding behind, and in the mother, like, she's really not ever hiding anything at any point.
No,
like, she
never.
Pretty much says what she knows, as far as I can remember anyway, at every moment. And then you got Will, who's trying to, like, I mean, in a fitting way, right? He is the product of the two of them. And so, of course, they're at war with each other.
Yeah. He's like trying to get to the truth, but also, he's so confused. He doesn't know what the truth is.
Yeah.
Where she's like, she knows.
Exactly. So I think it's really interesting. And maybe I'm going to try and use this as a segue now to the kind of the bigger stuff at the end. I think we should just get right into it. I think, so in the Broadway production, they had a Chicago tryout and then Broadway production in 2013, it did not do well. It had a decent-ish run. It got nominated for a couple of things, but it didn't do well. And I think what I heard, I had one of my acting mentors in high school said it was because they weren't focusing on the story and the relationships. They were focusing on the production, because this was the first show that used projections, like heavily relied on projections for the stage production. And so like you've got these just massive, you know, expensive projectors in the back, and they're just putting up all this different stuff on the stage, and it looks pretty real because the picture's just really crisp. But they were, from what, you know, I didn't actually see it myself, but just from what my mentor was telling me, like, that's what lost it. And it's actually interesting. If you go and see some of the videos on YouTube of it, there's a couple of them you can see between Edward and Sandra, so husband, wife. And the chemistry's a little not there.
Huh.
And you can kind of tell that, which is interesting. So to segue to the relational aspect and then the the whole belief complex that really gets established. I think it's important to note that this is like heavily relationally based. And if we miss the relationships, I think it's going to be really easy to then miss some of the bigger, the bigger things. And I think that's why I'm okay, like, recommending this movie.
Yeah.
As a caveat before we, you know, say some of the things we think are really negative about it, is the relationship, pieces. And I mean, it shows too that the script, I think, you know, to its credit, but also to, I think, further our points, before we criticize a few things, it can't stand without the relationships, right? Like, if you go totally in to the belief system, it flops.
Yeah.
Because it's not standing on truth, I would argue.
Yeah, absolutely.
Which is really interesting, because we have to have these relationships between father and son, mother and son, husband and wife. And if you don't get that, if you don't get that chemistry right, that truth right, because I think a lot of their conversations are really good.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of people resonate with the conversations that happen in the movie. And if you miss that, forget about it.
I think that's so true, because the stories take on an interesting significance when you're thinking about how does this relate to reality, though, mm-hmm. you know? And so I think to put a positive spin on the way that Will, I think what he comes to near the end is, I think he comes to realize, all this time when my father's been telling me these stories, he was trying to get to the truth.
Yeah.
I think that that's at least a fair and charitable way to approach how his father was telling these stories.
Because mm-hmm.
sometimes the truth is hard. Like,
oh, yeah.
To look straight at it is hard. And so I think that his father was trying to share himself with his son mm-hmm. and with others. And the way he was able to do that was through these fantastical stories. And you can get to a lot of the truth of things through that, and through the little spin on things. Of course, there is sort of I think it's fair to say that he went too far in how he, like you say, he clings right. to them, like being like,
right.
and can't seem to understand when his son, like, I think there's a scene where he says, like, oh, what do you want me to be?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah,
he
yeah,
says,
yeah.
What do you want? What do you want me to be? And Will says, just yourself, dad, you know, good, bad, everything. Just show me who you are for once.
Yeah.
And he has been showing him who he is.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're passing each other, right? They're not kind yep. of able to see each yep. other in that way. So I think that's what's so beautiful. It's like, I think that the beautiful thing to me as it gets to the end is him understanding that all this time, that's what his father's been trying to do. He's trying to share to his son.
Totally. I think, and I just a really quick note on that is, like, I think, I don't know Tim Burton's life story particularly well by any means, so I'm not going to try and tie it into, you know, how his approach and all this, or even the author of the novel.
Yeah.
But I think it's really interesting how I would argue older generations often have a harder time being vulnerable, just because that was not something cultivated in the, you know, the home or the, you know, in yeah. this, that's a blanket statement, right? Like, totally. There's always exceptions, but so I think it's really interesting. And two, we know that, you know, you've met old people, they are like solidified in their ways, and it is just, and that's it. I mean, yeah. they're pretty much what they got going on is what they got going on, which is why it's so crucial we establish holy, healthy habits at a young age. But it sets up really well. Just this, like, he is being vulnerable, right? Edward yeah. is, to the best of his ability. And it's not that he can't change. But, you know, I mean, he's dying and he's got a lot of stuff going on. And so I think if he could articulate himself the way Will wanted him to, I think he would.
Yes, I think so.
I just don't think he can, which is really interesting. So he gives what he has, which is these stories that he's kind of hidden behind for so long. But I want to jump, unless you have any other things on that, I would love to jump into the ending and, yeah, just the whole kind of that bit.
Yes, no, totally. I think this is perfect transition, because so even on the one hand, while I'm like, oh gosh, this is beautiful to see them finally connecting, seeing mm-hmm. Will like appreciate and accept his father.
Mm-hmm.
On the other hand, I think what the movie tries to do is, I mean, it says straight up, Will tells his story to his father, right? As his father is dying.
Yeah.
A big theme in the movie all throughout it has been, the father will say, it's not how I go. You know, this is not how he had seen
his
death supposedly in the witch's eye. Mm-hmm. And so he knows how he's going to die. This isn't it. And so then at the very end, his father's kind of looking to know like how it ends. Like,
yeah.
And Will tells his father this really beautiful story that kind of threads together all of the stories that he's been told mm-hmm. about his father. Mm-hmm. So they like race to the river. He sees all the different people of his life. They're all there to see him off. And then he gets to the river. He carries his father into the river mm-hmm. and he sets him in there. And he turns into a big fish, right? And the line is...
Just in case anyone missed that, the dad literally turns into a giant fish and swims away.
Yeah, yeah.
That's the ending.
Oh, yeah. Okay. My favorite moment is like right before he turns into a fish, he leans back and pulls his wedding ring out of his mouth and gives it to his wife. Because it's a callback to the very beginning. I think he like pulled a ring out of
the fish's
mouth. Yeah, it's crazy. Right. So he falls into the water and turns into a big fish. And so it says, you know, you become what you always were, mm-hmm. a very big fish. And that's how it happens. And then he explicitly says what that means. He says, you know, a man tells his stories so many times that he becomes his stories. Mm-hmm. They live on after him. And in that way, he becomes immortal.
Dun, dun, dun.
And I think that's, yeah. So clearly it's saying very much like, this is how you become immortal. It's making a statement that this is how you do it. Mm-hmm. We all want to know how you can be immortal, right? Yeah,
right.
Like, how am I? How can I live on? Or what is the meaning of my life? Like, when mm-hmm. I die and if my body decays, like, what is left of me? Is mm-hmm. there anything left of me? So I think legacy is a huge question for so many people. And immortality. And this makes a statement on how you get to be immortal. So... if it wasn't so explicit about it, I don't think I would be up in arms at all. But like the fact that it
says it outright.
Yeah, very much says like this. Because I think on some level, it's trying to present to the viewer sort of a feel good story.
Yeah.
For if you don't know what happens to you when you die, mm-hmm. like maybe this is what happens. Like you mm-hmm. can live on in your stories and you become immortal. And I think where I have an issue with that is a couple things. I don't think it's true.
Yeah.
I don't think it is helpful to land on that. I think it could mm-hmm. be helpful to talk about it and be like, is that possible or not? But I don't think it's helpful to land on that because I think there are bigger questions. I don't think it fulfills the desires of the human heart or our intellect to think that we are just our stories. Because my main caveat or my main like criticism would be, What about the person who lives a life that like they don't tell their stories to anyone?
Yeah,
no one knows their stories. What about the child who grows up in an abusive household and there's no one like really hearing their story, passing it on, mm-hmm. and maybe they die an unfortunate or untimely death? Like, mm-hmm. what's the meaning of their life?
Yeah,
no one's gonna tell their stories. And here's the thing too. You mentioned your papa, and his stories.
Yeah,
you know some of his stories, mm-hmm. but are your children going to know his stories, or your grandchildren?
Mm-hmm.
Unlikely.
Yeah.
Unlikely. I don't know a ton about my grandpa. Mm-hmm. I know almost nothing about my great grandfather.
Yeah.
So if that's your immortality.
Yeah, forget about it.
I hate to break it to you, but that's pretty poor.
Yeah,
immortality.
That's slim pickings.
Yeah,
I think that's. I mean, that's just it. I think another interesting movie I recommend watching anyway is called Kubo and the Two Strings. So mad it didn't win the Oscar. But
I've heard of this, but not watched it.
It's really good. Okay. It's really good. It's interesting. Another spoiler alert. Blah, blah, blah. I feel like we spoil a different movie
every time.
But it has a a kind of similar ending, I think it tries to revamp the whole "you live on in memories," and I think Kubo does it a little subtler, with more subtlety. I don't know, yes. English, but this one, I totally agree. I think it's the fact that it outright says it, I think, is one, a cry for help, because it's interesting because they recognize that we do have some desire to live on, be immortal, but it is just the weakest way to do it. But to their credit, I mean, what else could they rationalize? Like, if you are, let's just say, if you're an atheist, you don't have any, you know, you don't believe in God. Maybe you do some sort of loose meditation, but other than that, it's like the void. Welcome to the void. I think that would be as good as it gets. It's just kind of this whole memory bit. But and before we go any further, I just want to, like, you know, preach the truth right now that, like, the Lord has prepared a place for us. Now, whether or not we, you know, get to sit down in that place, you know, we have to respond to grace, of course. But we do have an immortal soul, and what we, I don't know.
It's meant for more.
It's meant for more. Exactly. So,
one thing maybe that the movie does hit on, I think, is that immortality is relational. I think that is important.
Yeah.
I think that's appealing, is that, I don't know, I think sometimes we can think of, if heaven's just a place where everything's, you know,
nice,
goody two shoes and nice, right. Then, like, that's not that exciting, but it is, it is relational. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not exciting though if you don't have any knowledge or interest in knowing the one with whom that relationship is, right?
God.
So I don't know. So not to criticize anyone who doesn't want that knowledge, but, like, I know for myself, I have less interest in heaven the less I know or have a desire to know God. You know? So the more that I, like, am knowing him and desiring to know him and coming into the joy of that, like, the more that heaven's exciting to me, because like it's forever with God.
Yeah.
I think that's a great point. Speaking of spoiling other movies, and also speaking of mentioning, we mentioned Signs last week. I thought about Signs again because
did you really?
Yeah, because you said you've never seen it.
No, I've never seen it. I know everything that happens, but I've never seen it. Yeah.
So there's an incredible scene in Signs where, so the main character is a former, like, Lutheran pastor, I think. But he's left his faith because of the death of his wife.
Oh, yeah.
Because of that. I say that loosely, but it was part of his loss of faith. And he has a conversation with his brother, and his brother's, like, looking for some hope. He's like, can't you just give me some hope? Instead of giving him hope, is actually kind of, like, gives him this very dark look on life, where he talks about how it's, at the moment of his wife's death, you know, she said, "See, swing away, Meryl." And he says, "Well, why do you think she said that?" It's because she was having random memories coming through her mind as she died. Had a memory of one of Meryl's old baseball games, the brother. And so she was just, like, saying that. And, like, he says, "There's no one looking out for us. We are alone." And, like, I don't know, just, like, that kind of, I thought of that just because, like, it's another, like you said, if that's, like, that sounds really dark.
Yeah.
We're all looking for, like, an answer to what is, you know, what happens after you die, you know? And I think, so I would submit, don't settle for that your legacy, your immortality is in stories. I don't think that's a sufficient.
No. Answer. And I think it is really interesting, the whole, look out, like, no one's looking out for us, because in a sense, Edward Bloom lives life. I mean, he is making it happen. He's probably the, you know, the poster boy of the American dream of building your life.
It's literally a montage where he succeeds at everything.
Yeah, exactly.
The hero of Ashland or Ashton.
Ashton. Yeah. The stupid musical song. There's a song in the musical about that. But he does it through relationships too.
Yeah.
Like, there's a point where he can't do anything and he wouldn't be able to do anything if he didn't have these relationships.
Right.
So I think it's interesting because as Christians, right, we're aware that the Lord puts people in our lives. You know, that's not, you know, I don't want to over spiritualize, you know, the people the Lord puts in our lives, but also I don't want to give God a lack of credit for the fact that he, I think very intentionally, puts people by us when we most need them.
Yeah.
Whether we realize that or not, right? Like, cause that can be an annoying person, right? But we really need to love that annoying person.
Right.
And similarly, I love how he is really reliant on these relationships because he doesn't have land to give away when he needs to give away a bunch of land or money to build a town or any of that sort of thing. And so I think for people, so if you're listening right now and you're like, okay, this is a bunch of rubbish. I would encourage you to dive into your relationships. And I think I think we can all get behind that.
Yeah.
And my prayer, of course, is that through relationships, you're brought to Jesus. If you're an atheist listening. I think to kind of be as ecumenical in a very large sense here, relationships are our means to holiness often. And thus, I think, you know, as well, our means to heaven. I mean, you think of any vocation you're called to, right? Like your wife is your means to holiness, your children, your means to holiness. If you're in a religious community, right? Your community is going to be your means to holiness. If you're a priest, your parish, the mother church. So, yeah.
Yeah.
I think we can really, I just wanted to.
I like that. I like that a lot. Yeah. And like to take his sort of, there's a way in which is and maybe isn't magnanimous, right?
Right.
Bloom. Like he has sort of this magnanimity in a certain way, mm-hmm. where he just kind of, he's too big of a fish for a little Ashton, right? Like he has to get out. He's meant for larger things. That's a big theme in it. But mm-hmm. I think to take that and approach it less in the way that he does earlier in the movie, where he's kind of just going out and doing all these heroic deeds.
Totally.
And more towards toward the end, where he's a little more mature. And yeah, he is connecting again with all those people who he's had these sort of heroic encounters with. And he calls mm-hmm. in those friendships that he has with them now and is able to do some good for people. And I think to take that view of having a magnanimity with our relationships, where we see greatness in them, see greatness in our relationships with people and in our fostering of our friendship and relationship with others, but not in a way that's self-aggrandizing or selfish, but rather that is giving. And I love that. So thank you for the closing message.
Yeah, way to wrap it up. That's good. Also, so before we give our little, you know, outro, I just want to say we did not get into a ton of things in this movie. I could easily talk about this movie for like a whole evening session kind of thing.
Absolutely.
So please watch the movie. Definitely recommend that you watch it. Not for children for sure, but I think adult audiences definitely can handle it.
Yeah, watch it and tell us your thoughts too.
Please tell us what you send us an email.
I know I had a friend who said he loved our Quiet Place podcast, mm-hmm. but he wished that we talked more about the mother and themes of mothering and like birth and such. So I was like,
there's always more.
But I'd love to hear that. Like that's part of what we're doing this for, is not just you and I can talk, or that you can hear us talk, audience, but rather like we want to start a conversation and we want to have those conversations with you. Yep. So please reach out to us.
Yeah. If you have thoughts, thoughtheydie@netusa.org.
Right.
I check it every day. I check it multiple times a day because I'm just so excited.
I don't. I'm also equally excited. And I just always forget the login. So.
I almost just said the password on this.
Oh, no.
I didn't.
Thank you for not doing that.
But my immediate impulse was, I'll just remind him right now.
Yes. Yeah, well, thank you, though. Thank you for listening. Mm-hmm. And you can reach out to us at thoughtheydie@netusa.org. We're sponsored by Net Ministries. Mm-hmm.
If you want to get involved as a missionary with Net Ministries, go to netusa.org/apply and apply today.
Yeah. Thank you.
Take care, y'all.